So welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening, sharing from my journal. I'm going to start the way I always start, which is by playing a bit of music just for centering purposes. The song I'm going to play is lovely. It's based on Michael Singer's book, The Untethered Soul. It's from an album called Songs of the Untethered Soul. But it's a long song. So what I'm probably going to do is play around 3, no more than 4 minutes of it, and then I'll just kind of gently turn down the volume so we don't have an abrupt stop. But it's a very long song, and so we'll enjoy part of it. Anyway, the name of this song is If You Knew How Much I Love You.
There's so much love, so much love, if you knew how much I love you. If you knew how much I love you, your heart would be set free. If you I
Isn't that lovely? And Nikki Dobson sent me a message in Facebook this week introducing me to that song. And I just love it. I'm so glad she introduced me to it. As I mentioned, we are here to look at my 7 Steps to Awakening journal. And I'm going to share a link to where we'll be starting tonight. We're going to start with quote number 675. These are Yoga Vasistha quotes from step 3 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. And as always, I'm going to read the quote that I was contemplating first, and then after reading that quote, I might share a little bit. We'll see what happens. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And then I will go and look at the journal, what I wrote when I was contemplating this. Now, most of my journal was written in the year 2012, and that's because I took what I called an increased year of silence, not total silence, because, you know, I was a mother, you know, I had a daughter here at the time, and but during the day, during the school day, and even during the summer, because she sleeps very late in the summer, I was able to spend, you know, 6 or 7 hours a day contemplating the 7 steps that year. And so most of my journal is from 2012. At the end of 2012 is when I received the guidance to begin Awakening Together, which resulted in a lot of work. And so after that, the 7 steps kind of got put aside while Awakening Together was being built, especially the writing of the MPP program, which was an awful lot of work, wonderful work, just as contemplative as the 7 steps. But it took a lot of my time. But now that is nearly done, and I have returned to the 7 steps. So now I'm posting several times a week again. So the journal is not only a historical journal, but it is once again a current journal. And right now I am contemplating step 4 in my daily life. But this journal entry that we're going to be looking at tonight is from 2012. In fact, it's from December of 2012. So this comes from near the end of that year of contemplation. The quote that I was contemplating is this. If the ego sense ceases to be, then the illusory world appearance does not germinate again, and all cravings come to an end. Again, if the ego sense ceases to be, then the illusory world appearance does not germinate again, and all cravings come to an end. I'm just reaching up above me. I have a few books right here that I kind of keep in arm's reach. One of them is NTI. One is A Course in Miracles. One is the Bible. And one is The Teachings of Inner Ramana. They're never far from reach. And that's because for some reason, lots of things that I read or contemplate return me to these 4 books, which I guess I would have to call my foundation. Right? My foundation, A Course in Miracles, NTI, the Bible, and the Teachings of Inner Ramana. And what I just now read from Yoga Vasistha reminds me of something in the Teachings of Inner Ramana. It's in the 3rd message in the book. This message is called The Purpose of Surrender, Part 2. It's talking about learning to listen to guidance in all things. That's what the message is talking about, so that you really aren't dependent on your thinking mind at all, although your thinking mind is still active, and although you still perceive a world and your thinking mind is still interpreting the world. What's happening in the Teachings of Inner Ramana is you're becoming so dependent on intuition that you're able to... gently ignore it, not deny it in the unhealthy way, but gently ignore it because you're listening to something that you know is more real, the spiritual intuition. and it's guiding you in all things. So that's just a little context for this particular message. And in this message it says, one who listens to guidance may be said by others to be awakened, but this one will only say he is realized because he realizes truth even as he experiences perception. He listens to knowledge because he knows that one who sees perception cannot truly see, but one who is not attached can be guided. Non-attachment and realization are one. Seeing truth is to be awakened. So this makes a distinguishment. Is that a word? It distinguishes between, I'll say it that way. It distinguishes between what I would call an unawakened master and an awakened one. Again, the unawakened master is someone who knows that the spiritual intuition, or what A Course in Miracles would call the Holy Spirit, that the Holy Spirit is always right, and that his own thinking, his own perceptions, his own interpretations are always wrong. And so even though the world is still present, again, because this one is not awakened, even though the world is still present, this one has realized who I really am, is this voice is representing the real me. This inner intuition is representing the real me. So I realize this is the real me. So instead of being mistaken by the false me and listening to it and reacting with it, I am going to listen to the real me, and I am going to follow it always. So it's kind of it's what Jesus called listening to one voice. And Jesus says, actually, in the Course, it was the last thing that he learned to do. And he also says that it takes great willingness. But what the inner Ramana is also saying is, but one who listens to only one voice, one who is in that position of being a master, of knowing how to distinguish between the ego and the Holy Spirit, and knows to always listen to the Holy Spirit, always be surrendered to the Holy Spirit, and always disregard the ego, that one is not awakened, right? And that leads us to Yoga Vasistha's quote again. Yoga Vasistha says, if the ego sense ceases to be, then the illusory world appearance does not germinate again, and all cravings come to an end. The illusory world appearance does not germinate again, and all cravings come to an end. So for this awakened one, there is no world. And for this awakened one, there's not that ego voice chattering. So when we learn, first of all, you know, when we are baby stepping this process, the first thing that we're learning to do is to distinguish between what we call the ego and the Holy Spirit. And for many people, this first step takes a long, long time. And the reason this first step takes a long time is because that voice that is the ego appears to be me. It's my thoughts, my opinions, my values, right? And so because people are so attached to believing this voice is me, they don't disregard it. Sometimes the voice becomes a little more spiritual in its language, and that can certainly satisfy us for a time because now we have a spiritual ego. But at some point, we come to notice that nothing has really changed. We come to notice that we still get annoyed. We still get angry. We still get scared. We still feel guilty. We still feel unworthy. And if there's a blessing in suffering, the blessing in suffering is at some point the suffering wakes us up to the fact, yeah, we still judge. Thank you, Jim. Absolutely. At some point, the suffering wakes us up to the fact that we aren't where we thought we were. I'll just say it that way. The way that I envision it in my mind is that, like, there's this nice dirt path that is so smooth and the dirt is so comfortably cool that when we're walking on that dirt path, we can literally take off our shoes and socks and walk right through the woods because that path is just so, it feels so good to the feet. And that path is genuinely listening to the Holy Spirit, genuinely listening to only one voice. And so we can walk right through the woods. If we're listening to the ego, including the spiritual ego, what happens is we're not really on the path. We're walking along the edge. We're getting stickers. We're stepping on rocks. Or if we're really listening to the ego, we're running right into the woods and all of the scary things that are out there. Only when we're truly listening to one voice are we on that soft path, that really nice, it just feels so good to be there path. But again, what Inner Ramana is saying and what Yoga Vasistha is saying is even that is not awakening. Because when there's awakening, there is no perception. There is no world. It doesn't arise again. And this is something that we can't imagine, those of us who still perceive, those of us who still see a world. But it has been said by enough masters from enough cultures over time that if we choose to, we can put faith in that. Why? Why put faith into the idea that there is an awakening that is so profound that you no longer see a world? I could actually answer that question in a number of ways, but I'm not going to. I'm going to only go in one direction with that right now. For me, always talking about me, by the way, even if I use the word you, I'm always talking about me, and I'm clear on that. For me, knowing that there is an awakening beyond perception keeps me honest, inwardly self-honest about where I am now, which means now I still need to distinguish between that ego voice and that inner wisdom and choose to follow that inner wisdom. And if at any point I start thinking that I'm awakened enough that I don't have to do that, and therefore I drop that discernment, there's a good chance that I will fall back into the default of the world, which is listening to the ego again. I'll start to wander off of that nice dirt path back off into the stickers and the rocks. I don't know what it's like to see no world. In NTI, it's an NTI Luke somewhere. I won't look for it now because I don't know exactly where it is and it would take too long. But at NTI, it says something about not stopping the spiritual path, not stopping the spiritual practice, not stopping the discernment, right? Keeping all of that going. Not stopping until you are the truth. Until you are the truth. And I remember when I wrote that down as the scribe, when I heard those words and I wrote those words down, I remember thinking, I don't know what that means. But I have a feeling that when I awaken to it, I'll know. Then I'll know. And of course, the wonderful example that we're all familiar with is that when we're asleep, physically asleep in our beds or on the grass like I was today in the backyard, and we're dreaming, Most of the time, we're not aware that that's a dream. More and more now, I'm starting to become aware, and I watch the dreams from a state of watching, but that's something that I'm practicing, and that's why that's starting to happen. But most of the time when we're in a dream, we're not aware that we're dreaming. We think that we are that person in the dream. But then when we wake up, we know the difference. When you wake up, there's no doubt. Oh, that was just a dream, right? So I trust that awakening from the world perception to truth, don't stop until you are the truth, NTI says. I trust that when I awaken, I'll know it just as clearly. And until then, no matter how skilled I become at listening to only one voice, it's helpful to still see myself as the student, meaning the one who needs to practice, the one who needs to practice discernment. I can't go back on autopilot, because autopilot at this point would be back to the ego again. That vigilance needs to remain. Yeah, Jim, I agree with you. Jim is saying the same thing in a different way, so I don't disagree with Jim at all. You know, it's funny when we talk about these things, because we can talk about them from different angles. But I, you know, the angle he's saying is perhaps we are, when we are the truth, the sense of me will be gone. And I misread that the first time. I thought he just said perhaps we. I didn't see the when. Perhaps we are the truth, which I agree with. But the sense of me will be gone is the way I read it the first time. Yeah. So like I said, you know, self-honesty to me is very important. I'm not interested in playing some game of being the awakened one. And I know that that's a lot of fun for a lot of people. And actually, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with other people if they want to pretend to be awakened, declare themselves awakened, declare other people awakened, even while they're still having financial problems and jealousy problems and, you know, what else, whatever else. I am not interested in that. How can you have financial problems that upset you is what I mean. You perceive them as a problem. How can you have financial problems and jealousy problems and competition problems and all of these other kinds of problems if you don't even perceive a world? I'm just not interested in playing that game. So even though I can't fathom what Yoga Vasistha or Inner Ramana is talking about when they talk about the illusory world appearance does not germinate again. I can't imagine that. I can rejoice and be happy because that tells me exactly where I am. I still perceive a world. So that means I'm still in the place where I need to be involved in spiritual practice. I need to be practicing discernment, right? I need to be carefully checking within and making sure I'm following that intuition instead of that ego. I need to be watching and alert. You know, in the Bible, Jesus tells his disciples to stay watch. Stay on watch, be alert, right? Because the thief comes in the night when you least expect it. That thief is the ego coming back to steal your attention away again. You know, you were very clear for a time, but you stopped watching. The ego saw the opportunity and came back and stole you away again. It's happened to many people, and it can happen to any one of us. So it's really good news. It's really good news to know that if I still perceive a world, I still need to be discerning. I still need to be on watch. I still need to be paying attention to what I'm listening to within myself. So again, quote 675 from Yoga Vasistha. If the ego sense ceases to be, then the illusory world appearance does not germinate again, and all cravings come to an end. All right, let's go see what I wrote in the journal in 2012. Number 675A. What is the ego sense? The feeling of I, distinct and separate, set apart, special, only me. Does this ego sense need to be good or bad, loved or hated? No. This ego sense can be perceived as good or bad. It can be loved or hated. Whether it seems to be good or bad, loved or hated, it is precious. It is precious to me because it is me as I think of me. And that's an interesting idea because, you know, some people, you know, maybe some of you, I don't know, but certainly some people really seem miserable with themselves. You know, their mind is constantly torturing them in some way or another. You know, whether it's telling them how guilty they are or how unworthy they are or whatever. It's just, you know, it's really down on them and they've listened to it enough and they just suffer with that. And you know, I used to look at people like that and I used to think, my gosh, it seems like letting go of ego should be so easy for them because, you know, they're so miserable with themselves. But this is saying even if we're one of those people who are so miserable with ourselves, don't be deceived. The ego is still precious to you. Precious not because you like it, because clearly you are struggling with the self-concept. It's precious simply because you think it is you. So it doesn't really matter whether we have a positive self-image, as they say in the world, or a negative self-image. It's the fact that it is a self-image. That is why we love it. That is why it's precious. Just because it is a self-image. Better to have a bad self-image than no self-image at all. That's the ego thinking. Right? Better to have a bad self-image than no self-image at all. And so, because we listen to the ego, and because we believe that ego voice is me, my thoughts, we tend to be attached to the self-image, whether it is positive or negative. And that's what this particular journal entry is saying, 675A. Let me just read this again. What is the ego sense? The feeling of I, distinct and separate, set apart, special, only me. Does this ego sense need to be good or bad, loved or hated? No. This ego sense can be perceived as good or bad. It can be loved or hated. Whether it seems to be good or bad, loved or hated, it is precious. It is precious to me because it is me as I think of me. So I'm going to scroll down and click on number 675B. Again, this is still the contemplation of the Yoga Vasistha quote, which says, If the ego sense ceases to be, then the illusory world appearance does not germinate again, and all cravings come to an end. Okay, so here's 675B. What is the purpose of the world to the ego sense? It gives me an identity. I am this and not that. Regardless of what this identity is, it is precious to me because it makes firm the idea of me. Without ego sense, what purpose is there for a world? Without a separate self seeking to confirm itself through identity and sense stimulation, I cannot think of a purpose for the world. Therefore, is the world a creation that comes from knowledge of true self, or from the search to make a separate self seem real? Given these choices, I would have to say the world comes from the search or desire to make a separate self seem real. What then is the core craving at the foundation of all seeming desires in the world? Make me seem real. In true self, can there be desire? No. If the idea of no desires is threatening, what is threatened? The idea of a separate me is threatened by the idea of no desires, because the base desire at the core of all desires is make me seem real. So that's a pretty deep, at least to me, a pretty deep journal entry. It's interesting how the questions arose as I contemplated the quote, and then I would look within myself and see the answers to the questions. What came as I contemplated this quote, along with the spontaneous inquiry that arose, is that I came to see it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if I am desiring to get married or desiring to get divorced, whether I'm desiring to be healthy or desiring to be sick because I think I'll get attention from people. They'll finally pay attention to me. Whether I'm just, you know, it just doesn't matter what I'm desiring, a new car. If I look very, very carefully at every desire, I find a me who desires. Which means every single desire, regardless of what the desire is, except for, of course, the one true desire, which I'll get to in a moment, but every single world desire is just by its nature reinforcing the idea of me. And the world offers so many opportunities to desire, we can't even imagine. I mean, I think that our imagination of what to desire is limited by our upbringing and our culture. You know, we probably can't imagine, or at least not fully, maybe partially, we probably can't imagine what a Syrian refugee is desiring, or what an ISIS fighter is desiring. I mean, there's just so much opportunity for desire here. And again, it doesn't matter what the desire is. It doesn't matter whether you and I would judge the desire as good or judge the desire as bad. It doesn't matter if the desire is kind of a positive desire moving in, you know, what we would call the right direction, or a negative desire that's going to take someone further down the steps of hell. It doesn't matter. The desire itself reinforces me. Me. And everywhere we look in the world, there's the opportunity to desire. So the world came from the desire for me, to be me. I think the Bible calls that to be like God. The world comes from the desire to be me, and it continues to generate more and more things to desire, which reinforces the me, reinforces the me, reinforces the me. But without me, without a desire for a me, there's no need for a world. So when the ego sense dies, the world does not germinate again. Because the sole purpose of the world is to desire me and to reinforce the desire of me. Let me read this again. What is the purpose of the world to the ego sense? It gives me an identity. I am this and not that. Regardless of what this identity is, it is precious to me because it makes firm the idea of me. Without ego sense, what purpose is there for a world? Without a separate self seeking to confirm itself through identity and sense stimulation, I cannot think of a purpose for the world. Therefore, is the world a creation that comes from knowledge of true self, or from the search to make a separate self seem real? Given these choices, I would have to say the world comes from the search or desire to make a separate self seem real. What then is the core craving at the foundation of all seeming desires in the world? Make me seem real. In true self, can there be desire? No. If the idea of no desires is threatening, what is threatened? The idea of a separate me is threatened by the idea of no desires, because the base desire at the core of all desires is make me seem real. Which means, of course, with no desires, the me begins to fade. And this is why you find so many spiritual teachers teaching letting go of desire. Buddha, this was one of Buddha's key teachings. Desire props up the me. And if that desire props up the me, then letting go of desires from a point of wisdom allows the me to fade. Now, I mentioned there's an exception to this, and that exception is what I call true desire, which is, as NTI says, the desire to know thyself, thy true self, right? Desire to know thyself. In A Course in Miracles, it says that the Holy Spirit can use everything the ego made. Which means if the ego made desire, the Holy Spirit can use desire to bring us back home. And so that desire energy, which was originally made to make me seem real, right? That desire energy can be re-engineered by the Holy Spirit into true desire, the desire for truth, to bring us back to awakening. And in fact, one way this has always worked for me, and it's very, very lovely. It works so well. That's why I say it's very, very lovely. If I find myself really starting to get caught on some desire in the world, it could be anything. You know, I'll just say desiring that somebody be different, right? There's somebody close to me that's being a certain way, and I'm wishing they would be different, right? A very common desire, don't you think? When I notice that desire, that I'm wishing they would be different, all I have to do is ask myself, what do I truly want? When I ask what I truly want, somehow the heart answers with that true desire, with that redirected energy. And when my energy is redirected towards the truth, the desire to have somebody be different just drops, it just disappears, it just drops away. The flood of the true desire is so enormous and so heartfelt that the false desire, which can do nothing except prop up the false me, the false desire just melts away in its presence. And now the person can be as they are, and I can be happy with them being as they are, because I'm back to wanting only to know thyself. I don't want anything else anymore. So it's wonderful how Holy Spirit re-engineers desire, the same force that is used to prop up the false me, when properly used, actually allows the false me to fade and disappear in a very gentle way. It dies in a pool of love. You know, no, it's not a painful death. Dies in a pool of love. So let me just read this one more time and then we'll move on. Number 675B. What is the purpose of the world to the ego sense? It gives me an identity. I am this and not that. Regardless of what this identity is, it is precious to me because it makes firm the idea of me. Without ego sense, what purpose is there for a world? Without a separate self seeking to confirm itself through identity and sense stimulation, I cannot think of a purpose for the world. Therefore, is the world a creation that comes from knowledge of true self or from the search to make a separate self seem real? Given these choices, I would have to say the world comes from the search or desire to make a separate self seem real. What then is the core craving at the foundation of all seeming desires in the world? Make me seem real. In true self, can there be desire? No. If the idea of no desires is threatening, what is threatened? The idea of a separate me is threatened by the idea of no desires. Because the base desire at the core of all desires is make me seem real. So again, if we find ourselves resisting the idea that there's no desire in the true self, resisting the teaching of, you know, gently letting go of desires, we don't want to repress desires. That's never a good idea. but gently letting go of desires, for example, asking, what do I truly want? And therefore letting weaker desires fade away. If this is something that we resist, if we're one that picks up our stick and fights for desire, what this is saying is that's actually the ego. That's the one who still wants to be me, me and my desires. I mean, look, me and my desires. How can there be my desires without a me? What is it that wants to be propped up here? Is it the true self that's fighting? Each one can look for themselves and decide. And I will go on to 676. The Yoga Vasistha quote, 676. It is only a fool that entertains a feeling. This I am. In relation to that temporary appearance known as the body, etc. It is only a fool that entertains a feeling, this I am, in relation to that temporary appearance known as the body, etc. I was looking at this today, not this quote, but this, you know, this teaching, because the teaching came up spontaneously. I was looking at, the idea of the question, who are you, coming from an outward person, expecting a name. And I was looking at the idea of giving the name, you know, Regina. But even as I was giving the name, I was thinking, but that can't be true. I can't be Regina, because that's just a name that was given to me at birth, right? And then the mind came back, well, then, but you're the body. You just said you were born. You're the body. And I looked at that and I thought, how could that be? Although I don't have any recollections prior to a birth. In fact, I don't have any recollections prior to age 4. This body has just changed so much. And in fact, don't scientists tell us that really, like every 7 years, it's actually a completely new body because all the cells have been regenerated and such? What I am is constant. I mean, I even closed my eyes and remembered being, I don't know, maybe a 7-year-old child. I was laying in the grass in my backyard at the time. So I closed my eyes and remember being a 7-year-old girl lying in the grass at my grandma's house in Oklahoma. And I could see that there's something here. People often call it presence, awareness. It's not mind, because my mind is very different from when I was a 7-year-old child. But there's something here that I refer to as I, that's exactly the same today when I was laying in the grass as a, quote, 55-year-old woman in Colorado as when I was laying in the grass as a 7-year-old girl at Grandma's house in Oklahoma. It's that consistency, that constancy, that which doesn't change. If I am anything, I am that. I am not the body, which changes incredibly. I'm not the mind, which changes incredibly. I'm certainly not the name, which is just a given label. So for some reason, I was looking at that in the grass today and noticing with certainty that none of those things could be true. And so that's what 676 from Yoga Vasistha says. It is only a fool that entertains a feeling, this I am, in relation to that temporary appearance known as the body, etc. So let's peek and see what I wrote about this in December of 2012. In accepting the body mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. The filter through which I appear to be this is my attachment to this as what I am. It is my desire to be this. Do I want to die? Is death in my heart? If not, why this attachment to something temporary as me? And in case you don't recognize the logic or reasoning in that question, the purpose of that question, I would call that a crowbar question, although it's a crowbar that is brought about by willingness. The purpose of that question is to help put that crowbar in there and kind of pry it loose from the attachment, pry the attachment away, you know. So here I am, I think I am Regina, yeah, or whoever I think I am, right? I think I am this, you know, and like, you know, this is who I am, right? I mean, and it's like, why do you want to believe that? Do you want to die? Because this temporary thing is going to die. Are you so attached to this that you want to die? You know, actually, A Course in Miracles says that we are. When A Course in Miracles talks about the four obstacles to peace, right? The third obstacle is death. We actually choose to die before we let go of the idea of me. We die as this person, right? The attraction of death. Thank you, Kathy. I couldn't think of the exact words. The attraction of death. Yeah, we choose to die. Like, we like death better than awakening. Death as me is better than no me. Just like a bad self-image is better than no self-image, right? Death of me is better than no me. Oh my God, how logical is that? It isn't logical at all. This is why Jesus tells us we're insane. So, and by the way, Alex, I see your question. What if the body is just a representation of who we are? My feeling is just to say, take that question back to yourself. It's not a question for me because it's not my inquiry. I don't have that question. That's your question. So take that question into silence, into the right mind, and ask and see what answer you get. What you're listening to now, yeah, good, because what you're listening to now are the questions that arose in me for me. And everyone else should take their questions to their inner self. Yeah, thanks, Alex. I see. You're only talking to yourself. Perfect. Yeah, just as I am. Perfect. Okay, good. So, number 676. In accepting the body-mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. Let's just listen to that sentence a few times because it's helpful if this will sink in a little bit. Maybe we can let go of some of this attachment to the body as who I am, right? And the mind, even more. I find even more than the body, the mind. I mean, what is it that screams, I am this body? It's the mind. It's the mind that screams, I am the body, right? So even closer than the attachment to the body is the attachment to the mind. At least that's the way it appears to me when I look at it. So in accepting the body-mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. In accepting the body-mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. That doesn't make any sense. We need to see this doesn't make any sense. We need to reverse what we choose to believe. In accepting the body-mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. The filter through which I appear to be this is my attachment to this as what I am. It is my desire to be this. Think about that. I desire to be this. Even if I hate myself, remember, a bad self-image is better than no self-image. So when we say I desire to be this, it just means I desire to be a me. You know, if the theory of reincarnation is something that happens, which many say it is. I don't have a memory of reincarnation that I know of. But if the theory of reincarnation is true, then we change the who we are a number of times, right? So it's not that I'm so attached to Regina specifically, Regina now maybe temporarily, But it's not that I'm attached to Regina specifically. I'm attached to a me. And if Regina dies, I take on another me, right? Isn't that the idea? And so what I really want is a self-image. But every one of those self-images die, one after another, after another, after another. So the question is, do I want to die? Do I want to be so attached to the self-image that something in me dies? Is death really in my heart? Do I want to go through that over and over and over again? And if I don't, then why this attachment to something temporary as me? I'm going to go ahead and just play a little more of the song I was playing in the beginning, and we'll just let that carry us to the top of the hour. We can listen to it with this teaching in mind. Do we really want to hold on to this me?
There's so much love. So much love. If you knew how much I love you, you'd melt in ecstasy. If you
everyone. I appreciate you coming. And Alex, I just want to say the reason I didn't answer your question is I didn't have an answer. And that's the only reason. There was no answer in me. All right, everybody. Have a good evening.